You are recording. Yes, you are. Okay. I don't know what happened, but it didn't record our presentation last Thursday. I'm not sure if anybody noticed. But you can go on, go to the online presentation. Okay. The exam number 2 will not be on Thursday unless you want to stick around afterwards, because we're giving an exam in the next class in 121, so you can take it during that time. Or those of you who want to take it online, it'll be online. And then if you don't want to take it online, come see me. We'll make we can do it Thursday afternoon, Friday morning, Friday afternoon, face-to-face. But we're going to do it online. And a lot of people's hands went up, so we'll discuss that later on. Chapter 5, stocks, study, chapter 5. I'm going to ask it to you again afterwards. Exam number 3 is going to be chapter 5 also. It's going to be the same question, same concepts. And then we started 6 valuations, the worksheets. We'll do them today again, go through it. So 2 parts, multiple choice, and then calculations. Okay? Cool? Yeah? Nod your head yes or no, or I don't know what the hell you're talking about, Piano. Okay, let's see how we did here. How are we doing? We're doing pretty darn good, you guys. Almost 12% up, 11.7%. Not bad. And Boeing is coming back. And the marijuana stocks, stay away from them until it becomes legal. And Coca-Cola is getting some bad reps lately, which they deserve, but they shouldn't get. Anybody want to sell anything? So we can buy something else? No? Happy with the watching it bounce up and down? What a great class. This is the best. This is the best. Almost 12%. You guys are awesome. And we have a few other things to go through. But first, we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? No? Okay, so we'll transition out of the bar jokes, all right? So this is the transitioning into the Battle of the Sexes jokes. So this guy walks into a bar. Have you heard this one before? And he's really sad. And the bartender says, "What's wrong, buddy? Why are you so sad?" He said, "Oh, my wife and I had a terrible knockdown, drag-out fight. And she told me she wasn't going to speak to me for a whole month." And the bartender said, "That's so sad." The guy said, "Yeah, the month is up tonight." You see, he's sad because the month is up. Now we're going to go into the Battle of the Sexes. Okay, good. Now, you're studying chapter 5, right? Nod your head yes, make you feel good. Go through all this information because you got to know it. I mean, you know, you're the investment gurus. And what we did not show you is a couple things that are on the website. Remember, everything's on the website you can do. But one of the books you're going to want to read. Oh, I'm sorry. Before I do that, I want to show you the books to read. Here are the books to read. No, they're not. Where are the books to read? They're the books to read. And the first book you should read should be this one. One Up on Wall Street or A Random Walk Down Wall Street, because these two books are awesome for beginners. This book is what you want to read eventually, but it's difficult. Benjamin Graham was Warren Buffett's teacher, and he's not easy to read, right? He's kind of hard to read. So what they do now, did I tell you this already? Did I tell you talk about the books yet? I don't think so. So what they do now, is he died in 1975, his last version was 1972, is they have a gentleman by the name of Jason Schweig, who's really good, and after every chapter, he gives his commentary. He says, "This is what Mr. Graham meant." Okay, so he makes it in plain English. We're going to take a look at some of that from this book, and then eventually you want to read Security Analysis, but this is pretty darn tough. We're doing some of the stuff right now that you see in Security Analysis, the valuation techniques. We showed you Wall Street People, which was the book that I read from about the two John Gottfried and John Meriwether. And that's a good book to read. You read about all the different scallywags and the people who are, you know, work with integrity and authority. Then this book he wrote again, sort of. Beating the Street is basically the same book, but he goes into more detail about how he does his analysis. But it's basically the same book. And then the folks at National Association of Investors Corporation ask him to take his book and turn it into a beginner's guide. So they're all three are the same book, basically, but he's still good to read. This guy was Louis Rukeyser was the host of a show on PBS for 30 years, over 30 years, about Wall Street And this book is almost like a history lesson because it's before the internet, and it's fun to read that. Now, those are all about, you know, stocks. The next four really are not about stocks. Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds is a book that still shocks today. It was written in 1840, and it talks about witchcraft and the witch hunts, and it talks about the Crusades and all the folly that we humans have done. Because one of the students said it really well. It's easier to fool 300 million people than it is to fool one person. And this is what's going on now with the fake news and all the other crap that's going on. So it's nothing new. Then I think I told you about The Wealthy Barber. Did I tell you about The Wealthy Barber? It's more for Business 121, Financial Planning and Money Management. But it's really well written. The numbers are wrong because it's from the 1980s. And then The Millionaire Next Door. I have a couple of copies of this. Is another book you want to read. It's more about 121, but still, the ideas are the same. And then eventually, we'll talk about this book later. You want to read this book. Here with 1,000 Faces, it's a user's manual for humans. Like, how do you live this life? And if that sounds boring, this is the book that started Star Wars. Joseph Campbell was the impetus for Star Wars. He actually was consulted by George Lucas. He was on the set. So check it out. Check out books. You like books? You've heard of books, right? You've picked up a book every once in a while. It's cool. You can get them on your cell phone. You can download them to your cell phone so that you don't have to actually hold a book in your hand. You can be watching your screen. Anyway, here's something that comes from the intelligent investor. And one of the things that Mr. Benjamin Graham really hammers away is that you shouldn't fear downturns. They're going to happen. They should be looked at as opportunities. Stocks are crashing, so you turn on the television to catch the latest market news. But instead of CNBC or CNN, imagine that you tune into the Benjamin Graham Financial Network on BGFN. The audio doesn't capture the famous sour clang of the market's closing bell. Video doesn't home in on brokers scurrying around the floor of the stock exchange like angry rodents. Nor do they run any footage of investors gasping on frozen sidewalks as red arrows whiz overhead. No, instead, the image that fills your TV screen is the facade of the New York Stock Exchange, festooned with a huge banner reading, "Sale 50% off! You ain't seen nothing yet!" Stay Ackerman announces Brentley stocks became more attractive yet again as the Dow dropped another 2.5% on heavy volume. The fourth day in a row that stocks have gotten cheaper. Tech investors fared even better as leading companies like Microsoft lost nearly 5% on the day, making them even more affordable. That comes on top of the good news of the past year, in which stocks have already lost 50%, putting them at bargain levels not seen in years. And some prominent analysts are optimistic that prices may drop still further in the weeks and months to come. My forecast is for stocks to lose another 15%. I'm cautiously optimistic that everything goes well. Stocks could lose 25%, maybe more. Let's hope Mr. Anderson is right. Falling stock prices would be fabulous news for any investor with a long, very long horizon. You see? You like that? Okay. Now, is it really that much fun? Is it? No, but it's something that's going to happen. And did I show you this one already? That bear markets come and go, but the news, look how much upside and look how much downside now. It's very painful, but it happened. So, okay, so I think I've pleaded at you enough times. All right, let's get back to number 6. Okay, so we went through stock, common stock, and now stock evaluation, and we had gone through the first part. We'll review these problems, hopefully today, the price ratio models. Certainly on Thursday, we're going to review, and view on Thursday. But we had gone through the idea behind a net stock valuation and security analysis and what we call fundamental analysis, and then we looked at the price to earnings ratio, we looked at the price to cash flow ratio, the price to sales ratio, and did the calculations. Again, we'll do them again. We have a second worksheet to do. Hopefully we'll have time today, if not on Thursday. But these are not the most exciting ones. In fact, they're the ones that I don't even think are that good. How are we doing? Okay. And so here are the models that my humble opinion, are the best models. And these are just a few. There are others that are similar to this, but they're very basically variations on a theme. Because what we're going to do is we're going to take cash that we expect to receive in the future and walk it back to the present. So, do you remember this from last week? Did you study this all weekend long, right? Nod your heads yes. Make me feel good. Okay, good. what we do is we take the dividend in year number one and then divide it by 1 plus K, which is our required rate of return. This is what we decide. And then we do that for year number two, the dividend in year number two plus 1 plus K to the squared power. And then we do that for year number three and 1 plus K to the third power. But we don't have to do the exponentiation. We use the present value table. So everybody got chapter 6 packet? Chapter 6 packet? If you weren't here on Thursday, you didn't get a chapter 6 packet. So pass this back to Nicholas. And here, who else needs one? Okay. Pass one back, please. Okay, pass that to her. There you go again. Everybody else got a chapter 6 packet? Because what we saw is that we're going to discuss the present value. And it tends to get people conceptually tripped up. It reminds me of a stair step that's only this big, right? Stair steps. If a stair step's that big, do you have any problems going up and down the stair step? No. But when it's that big, what happens? You always trip on it, right? Because you don't expect it. And it's the same thing true. It's easy mathematically, arithmetically, it's easy, but conceptually, it's like, wait a minute, I get tripped on it. So what we're going to do is we're going to decide, do we want money now or do we want money in the future? And we're going to see whether those two are equivalent according to our required rate of return. So the formula that is very scary has the present value calculations built into it. But what we do is we use the tables. We use the tables. Now let's get the table up on the screen. Okay, that's a mistake. It should be the 19th. Okay, I hope this is the right one. Let me make sure this is the right one. March. This is the wrong. I got problems. I got serious problems. My apologies. This is where, you know, this is when you feel like the world is falling down upon you and you need to retire. Let's make sure this works. Okay. Oh, darn it. I had it this morning. No. Or wait. I know what to do. Chapo 6. You ever have one of those decades? Chapo 6. DX. Okay. Well, what the hell was that? Okay. Is that the right one? Okay. Okay. Now we got the right one up there. Ah, we got the right one up there. Da, 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 da. Okay. What's it going to do? Is it going to open up Internet Explorer? I don't need Internet Explorer. Yeah, get rid of Internet Explorer. This is it. Present value. So you're going to use the formula sheet when you do the exam. You'll have it with you. You'll be doing the second part of the exam either in face-to-face or at home. You will have the handout in front of you. The work. You will have the exam in front of you. You will have this formula in front of you. You'll have the worksheets. You will have, and also the most important thing is you will have this present value table. Do you remember this from last week? Close all tabs. Okay, so now I'm back in the good graces of the internet class here. My apologies. Okay. So this is right. So what we say is, look, we're going to get this example, which is kind of stupid, and we'll see a better example. We're going to get $100 in 1 year, year number one. We're going to get $100 in year number two. We're going to get $100 in year number three, and then for some odd reason, the company goes out of business. So we're going to get $300. But is it worth $300 to us today? The $100 we get a year from now, the $100 we get 2 years from now, the $100 we get 3 years from now, is that worth that much to us today? Everyone should say no. Because of the time value of money. If we expected a 0% return on our money, yeah, it would be worth $300. But no, we expect some kind of return on our money. 5%, 8%, 9%, 10%. The book, in its infinite wisdom, uses 15%. Should we ever expect 15%? Maybe we'll get it, maybe we won't. But if you do expect that, expect to have a lot of volatility. And so we go over to the form. You got the handout? We go over to 15% and down 1 year, and what do you see? Everyone should say 1870. What do you see? Please answer me. It's bad for my self-esteem. What is it? Point? Okay. So we multiply that $100 times 0.870, and we get $87. And the same thing we do for year number two, but we go down 1 year, and at 15%, the present value multiplier is? Okay. And then for year number three? And whatever those numbers are, let's take a look at them because they're on the $75.60. I can do them in my head. $65.80. And then we add those up. There's that summation. I'm not going to use that. Just add those up. And we get about $228.40 or 32 cents or whatever. So this is what the present value of these three payments of $100 over the next 3 years is worth to us if we require 15%. If we required a different rate of return, 10%, you see the multipliers are different. If we require only 5%, the multipliers are different. Do you see what's going on here? And you see why it's such a crazy system? Because everybody is expecting to get different amounts. So it's worth different things to different people. As we often say, value is in the eye of the beholder. Okay, so let's now take a look at the models. As we go through the models, you'll see how they are actually worked out. So you have your handouts with you? You have your yeah. Because now we'll be on worksheet number one. We'll do an example, and then we'll take a look at worksheet number one. Okay, so the zero growth model, which, by the way, is not covered in the book, which it's really just a special example of the next model that we'll take a look at. But we make it separately because we show the model basically builds upon itself. So here is a company that we expect to continue to pay $3 per share over the next, you know, whatever, 4 or 5 years, whatever. That's about as far out as you go, 3, 4, 5 years. And so the formula is actually very simple. The value of a stock is equal to the dividends that we get, our annual dividends, divided by what our required rate of return is. So in the example in the that we have here is a company that's paying us $3 per share. And they've been paying $3 a share for the last several years, and we expect them to continue to pay $3 a share into the future. You take $3 and you divide it by our required rate of return, which in this case we say 6%. Let's say 6%. Then we would expect this stock to be valued about $50. Now, what's the market price? We don't know. You know, we have to look at the market price. But this is what we think the value is. Now, this might look familiar to some of you math fans, because if you remember, the dividend yield from Chapter 5 was equal to the annual dividend divided by the market price. Well, what we've just done is swapped the market price with the required rate of return, which is, you know, in this case with we swap the dividend yield. We say the dividend yield is our required rate of return. So this model is saying, look, you're basically buying this stock for the dividend yield. Whatever the dividend yield is, that's the annual dividend divided by the current market price. If you say, look, if I put the dividend yield on the bottom, move the market price over here, you math folks, you know you can do that with division, right? You see that the value of the stock is basically divided, the dividends divided by what our required rate of return is. And if I confuse the hell out of you, my apologies, ignore that. But let's take a look at a real-life example. Here's a real-life company. And on the worksheet, and in the assignment, and in the exam, they will always be utilities. Do utilities tend to pay the same dividend over and over and over again? Nod your head yes. Yeah, because they're very stable, most of them. Some of them not, depending on what's going on with them. But have you ever heard of Consolidated Edison? Did you ever hear of Thomas Edison? Okay, well, this is the company started 140 years ago or whatever in New York. This is the New York Power Company, Con Ed, they call it, Consolidated Edison. ED is the symbol. And they took that symbol long before Viagra, by the way. Okay, so the current ED, anyway, the current market price is $82.66, right? That's the market price as of, I'm sorry, March 1st, 2019. It's currently paying $2.96 per year. And we've seen that it's been doing this for quite some time. So we have to ask ourselves, what's our required rate of return? What do we expect? And that's different for everybody. With a utility, can you relatively expect 8%? Personally, no. If I get 5, 6% from the utility, I'm really happy because they're stable, right? They're not Netflix. They're not going to drop 50%, right? Unless their power lines caused the fire that made them bankrupt. Like, but then you guys were smart enough to go out and buy that stock. So let's use 8%. So if we take the $2.96 and we divide it by 0.08, we get $37. What's the market price? $82.50. Do we think it's a good buy potentially for us? No. Okay, why don't we lower our required rate of return? What if we say we're only interested in 5%? We take $2.96 divided by 0.05, and that gives us $59. The stock is still too expensive for us. With a market price of $82.66, the stock is yielding 3.59%. So what do? You take $2.96 divided by $82.66, and you get 3.59. Now, would you be happy with 3.59 from a dividend? I'm not. Personally, to me, that seems like, wow, that's too expensive. But investors are saying, no, I'm happy with 3.5%. I'm happy my savings account's paying 0.1, 0.5. Are you with me? Understand the model? The model is saying that it's too expensive. Now, is the model right? Maybe, right? It's just the model. It's just there to point us in the direction of potentially good investments for us. Okay, so now let's take a look at the let's take a look at the worksheet. Got the worksheet in your hot little hands? Bum, 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 dun, dun, dun. Worksheet number one. Where is it? There it is. Okay. So we did these guys. Oops. We did these guys here. We did these two last week. The three last week. We'll do worksheet number two and do the same price models. Here it is. Indiana Electric Company. It's not a real company. When you get this worksheet number two, all these are phony companies here. But this is an electric company, right? If you see a utility, which model are you going to use? Everyone should say zero growth model. If you see a utility, which model are you going to use? The growth model. Okay. So they're paying $1.25 in dividends. $1.25 in dividends. They've done so for many years. We expect it to continue doing so well into the future. If our required rate of return is 6%, 0.06, how much would we be willing to pay for the stock? So what does the model tell us? $1.25 divided by 0.06. Come on, folks, you got the calculators, 99-cent calculator, it's all you need.
$20.83.
So the model is saying we believe the present value of this stock is worth $20.83. What's it selling for? $20. So, hey, maybe it's a potentially good investment for us. Because we believe it's worth $20.83. And the market is saying it's worth $20. The market is selling for right now $20. With me? Does it mean it's a good investment, necessarily? Do we have to do a whole lot more research? Oh, yeah. Did we look at the earnings call? Did we look at their competitors? Did we read as much as we can find about it? Did we look at the value? What's the value? Okay. I'm getting ahead of myself. Cool. Is that pretty simple, though? It's actually very simple. You take the annual dividend and divide it by what we expect the required rate of return is. It gives us a number that we can compare against the market price. Piece of cake. Right? Conceptually, it's a little tricky. What is this present value? I don't understand it. But when you do the calculations, you go, this is pretty darn simple. Now, the next model has a really stupid name. Constant Perpetual Growth Model. It comes from the Department of Redundancy Department. Because doesn't constant perpetual mean the same thing? Constant perpetual. So, and if you ever work in a school district, you will learn all about redundancy. Department of Redundancy Department. Okay, so the constant perpetual model is used when we see a stock that has been raising their dividend a certain growth rate over years. They have perpetually, constantly raised their dividend over the last several years, and we expect them to continue to raise their dividend over the next several years. Are you with me? Understand? Piece of cake? So if you see an assignment sheet or a worksheet or an exam that says this company has been raising their dividend consistently, constantly at 6% or whatever, you know which model to use. Which model to use? Let's say it together. Constant perpetual growth. You might think I'm crazy. You may be right. But when you speak it, it actually helps you learn better. It's shown. It has to do with the back of our head and all the different connections we make. Okay, so here is an example. Oh, so we haven't done the formula yet. Oops, excuse me. We take the annual dividends and divide them by the required rate of return. Well, that's the zero growth model, isn't it? However, we need to add some terms here that account for the fact that those dividends are growing in the future. Those dividends are growing. So you take 1 plus the growth rate, the dividend growth rate here. This should look familiar. This is what we did last Thursday when we multiplied times 1 plus the earnings growth rate, 1 plus the cash flow rate, 1 plus the sales growth rate. Remember that? And then what we do is we subtract out our dividend growth rate. We discount. There's that word that we use. We discount the dividend growth rate. So it's really basically the same formula with this extra term here. It's the same formula because if you put in 0 here and 0 here for zero growth, you get the same formula. That's why the book doesn't bother to show it to you, because they assume, oh, you know that already. But it's the same model. So here's an example of a company that's growing their dividend at 5% a year. So let's say they're paying us $10 a year in dividends. If we multiply that times 1 plus 5%, that's 1.05. Everybody understand how we got from here to here? Nod your head yes, or go no, Frank. Because that's what 5% is, 0.05. And then we divide that by our required rate of return. Again, the book wants you 15%. False. 15% minus the growth rate of 5%. That's 0.15 minus 0.05. And so $10 times 1.05, it's already done. It's up there at $10.50 divided by 0.1. And we expect the stock to be worth about $105 per share. Now, what is the stock actually worth? That's when you got to go to the marketplace and see what people are actually buying and selling it for. Make sense? Do you have Chapter 6 assignment sheet? Is that Chapter 6? Okay. We're on worksheet number one. Worksheet number one. Okay, now let's take a look at a real life example. Have you ever heard of 3M? Minnesota Mining and Materials. Never? We talked about them. What do they make? Scotch tape, post-it notes. They make reflective tape. They make thousands of products. Most of them are flat. And they've been around for decades. I'm not sure exactly how long. And the current market price is $207.49. So we take a look and see that they have been, let's assume that they're growing their dividends at 8%. All right? So we see that their dividends are $5.76, and we assume that they're going to continue to grow those 8% into the future. So if our required rate of return is 13%, we take the $5.76 times the 1 plus the 8% that we're assuming the growth rate is, and we divide it by our required rate of return of 13% minus the 8%. Everybody see that? Okay, you want to do it? I mean, I've already done it up here, but go ahead and do it there, down there. What is 5.76%, I'm sorry, $5.76 times 1.08? What number do you get? What number do you get? 6.22. Yeah, like $6.22. You don't have to use all the numbers. We're just you know, blowing smoke here. We don't care about the precision, but I put the 08. And then this is easy. You can do that in your head. 0.13 minus 0.08 is... 0.13 minus 0.08? 13 minus high, yeah. 13 minus 8 is 0.05. So if you take $6.2208 divided by 0.05, you get $124. What's it selling for? 207. Not necessarily a very good investment, is it? But what if we simply lower our required rate of return? What if we simply say, you know what? I'm happy with 10%. I'm happy with 8%. You give me 8%. And so what happens here? You go from 13 down to 10%, and this goes to 0.02. And now when you take $66.22 somewhat divided by 0.02, you get $300. You see the difference? The model is very sensitive to our choice of required rate of return. You just change the required rate of return a few percentage points, and boom, you get a huge difference in price. Questions, thoughts, ideas? You can say, what the hell are we doing, Piano? Are you with us? You with us? Stick with us. Are the calculations that hard? No. Are the concepts making you a little nervous? Yeah, good. Okay, that means you're thinking, okay, unless you're just going, forget, I'm not going to interest you. Yeah, the concepts are a little tricky. But the reality is the calculation's easy to do. Yes, Efren.
We already talked about what our
Efren's question is, have we discussed what we should determine our required rate of return is? And yes and no. We have discussed it. What we told you what was reasonable. What can you reasonably expect from stocks? But, as you see, the book wants you to expect 15%. And you might get it. I mean, Warren Buffett's been getting it for over 30 years. Peter Lynch, here's another example. Peter Lynch did 29% over 12 years and then retired. I don't think that's realistic. I hope you'll keep in mind 8, 9, 10% over decades, and maybe you'll do better. Maybe you'll do worse, but I hope you do better. And if you follow the precepts we do here, the concepts we do here, and the world doesn't end, you should do relatively well. You know, capitalism might be the worst possible economic system ever devised, except for all the others. So what would you expect? The question is, I turn it back on you. What do you expect? Do you want to get 8, 9, 10%? Yeah? You got to stay with stocks, right? If you want to get 3, 4, 5%, you can go with bonds. If you want to get 2%, you can go with cash. And if you want to go with real estate, that's a whole other world. But you can do 8, 9, 10% with real estate, too. It's just a hell of a lot trickier. Okay? Did I answer your question? The answer is, it's your decision. What you decide. Okay, so now, do you think 3M is a good value? Would you buy 3M? Well, the model is simply pointing us in the direction of companies like this. Companies that have been around for decades and have paid dividends and have grown those dividends over decades. Okay, questions? Okay, let's go to the next one. And that is McMurderers. I'm sorry, McDonald's. Have you ever heard of McDonald's? No? They sell you fat, sugar, and salt. And they make a lot of money doing it, folks. They make a hell of a lot of money doing it. The current market price is $185, $4.64. Let's assume they're growing the dividend at 8%. And let's do our calculation. With 13%, what's the annual dividends? $4.64 times 1.08 divided by 13% minus 0.08. So what do we got here? Are you doing the calculation? Just do it. I know it's up on the screen, but just do it so you get the feel. $5.01. Is that what you got? 4.64 times 1.08. Yeah? Then divide that by 0.05, 13 minus 0.08, 0.13 minus 0.08, and you get about $100. It's selling for $185. So should we expect to get 13% from McDonald's? Maybe if things go well for them. You know, another bird flu happens and Yum! Brands Kentucky Fried Rat is on the skids again, and yes. Right. Those are the annual dividends.
Per share.
Now, they don't pay it to you all at one time. In the United States and most other countries, it had something to do with the UK. In the past, Canada, Australia, South Africa, Hong Kong, they pay you quarterly. We pay you. The United States pays you quarterly. Other countries, they pay semi-annually every 6 months or annually. They pay once a year. But that's like France and Germany. I'm not sure what Japan does. I should look at it. But okay, so yes, we're getting $4.64 for every share we own. But now, what happens if we simply lower our required rate of return? If we simply say, you know what, I'm not after 13%. That means I got to really take a lot of risks. And a company like McDonald's, like 3M, they're not going to pay us 13% because they're already so huge. We got to go with really high growth, very scary companies. So 10% minus 8% is 0.02. Divide that $5.01 or so divided by 0.02, and we get $250. So the model is saying that McDonald's is undervalued if we simply reduce our required rate of return to 10%. Are you with me? Piece of cake? Yeah, it's not that hard, really. Conceptually, you're still a little unsure of yourself, probably. Maybe not. But the calculation is easy. Now, you ever heard of Target, that fabulously exclusive French department store? What's it called? Target! I'm sorry, Target. Every time you go in there, you're red! Okay. So, They're only based here in the United States. They have not moved out of the United States yet, like Costco, like Walmart, like Amazon. But they do pretty well for themselves here in the U.S. So let's say that they're paying $2.56, because that's what they are, $2.56. And let's assume, again, that they're growing their dividends at 8% a year. All right? If our required rate of return is 13%, then we do the calculation with 0.05 on the bottom, and 256 times 0.08 is about 276, whatever that is, 276.48. And it says that the stock is only worth about $55. But again, if we simply reduce our required rate of return to 10%, 0.02, we get $138. So, yes?
Yeah, Please.
It depends on how you create, it's called the registration on the account, how you set it up. When you go online or to the broker and talk with the broker, they're going to ask you to fill out a form. And that form is, on the form is who's the title holder, the registration it's called, who's the title holder. In California, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not allowed to give legal advice, but in California, it makes sense for you to do joint owners if you're married. Because automatically, it's community property, and there's seven other states that have community property. But in other states, you could have a title to that, and your spouse doesn't really have anything to do with it. You know, when you pass away, then it's up to the, if you pass away prematurely, it's up to the state's laws, or if you have a will or something like that. Yeah, you can change your registration. That's a good question. It's a good question. People often say, "Well, how do I do this?" But if you're single, you know, you just put it in your name. But if you're married, you probably want to have joint. But I'm not allowed, believe it or not, folks, we are not allowed to give any kind of advice on that. When we ask, how do you want this? They'll say, what do you say? I cannot tell you. What I can say is, oh, well, most people do joint accounts with rights of survivors. Most people do that. But I couldn't say, you need to do that, because then all of a sudden I'm a lawyer, and I'm not a lawyer, and I can get sued and get.
Can you use survivor's rights without a joint account?
No, that's called transfer on death. That's something completely different. I wouldn't. You can set it up, yeah. It's called transfer on death. But again, you need to talk with your lawyer. What?
So that might be a smarter choice. It depends upon your viewpoint.
It also depends on what it is. If it's a spouse, do joints rights with.
What,
yeah.
If it isn't a spouse?
Then you need to don't ask me. Well, ask me in the office where I can tell you and not let anybody else hear me. Because that it gets into legal issues. Yes. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. You really should. Okay. Once you have a child or you start accumulating any kind of assets, you really need to talk to a lawyer about estate planning. Business 121, Chapter 14, the final chapter of life in our class, is estate planning. So you really need to talk to a lawyer. I can point you. I actually have a couple of very good lawyers who are trustworthy. How do you like that? In the South Bay. And if you have a child, or if you own a property, or if you have any kind of assets, you really need to talk to a lawyer about proper estate planning. Now, don't tell the lawyer that I told you you need a trust or something like that. No, tell the lawyer I told you you need to talk to a lawyer. And the lawyer will say, very wise advice. $1,000, please. And they'll set you up. They'll set you up with a living trust, most likely. Okay, so I know Target doesn't have the best reputation for being the most elegant store in the neighborhood, but it's pretty darn profitable. Have you heard of Pfizer? What is Pfizer? Pfizer. Yes, that's what it says. Blue chip pharmacy. Lipitor, that's the statin. If you have high blood pressure, not high cholesterol, they make Viagra, among lots of other drugs. And the current market price is $43. They're paying $1.44 in dividends. And again, let's assume that they're growing their dividends at 8%. What happens if we require a 13% return on our investment? Then we do through the math and we get $31. Selling for $43. But if we reduce it to 10%, we wind up with $77. Do people stop taking their medications just because there's a recession? Let's hope not. Okay, and the last one we'll take a look at is Altria. Yeah, I'm sorry. Laura, I'm sorry.
How do you, know the dividend growth rate to
I was hoping somebody wouldn't ask me that. Oh, you're a sneak. Hang on to that question. We'll get to that. We'll get to that really soon, okay? Don't you just hate it when somebody catches you sneaking? Okay, be right there. We'll be right there, Laura. I trust you. Okay, have you heard of Altria? You ever hear of Marlboro cigarettes and Virginia Dims? This is the company that sells Marlboros and Virginia Slims in the United States. They spun off the other company, which is now called Philip Morris International. This used to be called Philip Morris, by the way. They used to own Miller Brewing. They used to own Post Cereal. They used to own Kraft. They used to own, they've been spinning them off. And so the current market price is about $52.75. They're paying $3.20 in dividends. And if we use a 13% rate of return, you get $69. Wait a minute, what's the current price? $52.75. Wow! Our model says that Altria is worth $69 if we expend 13%. What a buy! If you conveniently ignore the fact that tobacco kills 400,000 Americans every year, would you buy Altria? Would you buy a company that its product, when used as directed, kills its consumers?
Yes.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's been a great stock for decades, folks. But there are some people who just say, no, I will not. And sleep soundly. There are some people who just say, no, I'm not buying Altria. I'm not buying British American Tobacco, Reynolds Tobacco. Forget it. It's not going to happen. And yet, it's been a phenomenal investment. I mentioned Mr. Louis Rukeyser. On his show, there was a gentleman who was a money manager, mutual fund manager. He loved Philip Morris, which at the time was called Philip Morris. And Mr. Rukeyser said, now, I forget the guy's name. He said, you're Mormon, aren't you, sir? He goes, oh, yes, Mr. Rukeyser, I'm a Mormon. Now, Mormons don't smoke cigarettes, right? They don't drink, they don't smoke cigarettes, right? Any Mormons in here? It's forbidden. And he said, oh, yes, sir, no, I don't drink, I don't smoke cigarettes. He said, now, how do you square this? How do you rationalize this? And he was very, very matter-of-fact. He said, look, we know that there are no secrets here. Everyone knows, or should know, unless they're fooling themselves, that tobacco is a very dangerous product. And yet they choose to consume it anyway. He glossed over the fact that it's highly addictive, right? And the fact that the cigarette company's not stupid. They know when people start. When do people start smoking? Yeah, early teens, usually. By the time they're 18... they usually won't start. Sometimes, but usually it's 12, 14. And that's why Camel Joe, some of you don't remember Camel Joe or Joe Camel, whatever the hell his name was, the cartoon character. Joe Cool, yeah. He was just as popular as Mickey Mouse with six-year-olds. And there was I wish I would have saved that cartoon. It had a guy saying, look at this. This study says that children 6 years old know Joe Camel as much as they know Mickey Mouse. What do you think we should do? And the other guy is over here, and he's reading the newspaper, and he goes, hire Mickey. He's a tobacco executive. Hire Mickey. Like, in other words, they had enough money, they could go hire a Disney character. Okay, you with me? So, would you buy Altria? Yes? And I think, I don't know if I'm right or not, but once marijuana becomes legal, who do you think is going to make the most money out there? Philip Morris, right? Well, Shreya. Okay, let's continue. Who's that? Who is that?
Brian.
Who are you?
Do you know who it is?
It's my conscience and Laura. Come clean about what?
Fess
up about what?
Where did you get dividend growth?
I made them up. All these companies are growing their dividends faster than 8%.
That's better.
Don't you just hate your conscience? Well, here's my conscience here. You see, we kept saying, assume that the dividends were growing at 8%. Right? The constant perpetual growth model is very sensitive to the assumed growth rate of dividends. The recent growth rates of 3M, McDonald's, Target, Pfizer, Altria are all 8% or higher. McDonald's 8.2, Pfizer 8.5, Altria 12%, 3M almost 13%, and Target's almost 14%. They've been growing their dividend like crazy. Is it going to continue? I don't know. They've been buying back their stock. They've been taking all this cash and giving it back to the shareholders. The model doesn't work, though, if the required rate of return is equal to or less than the dividend growth rate. Think about it. If our growth rate were 13%, what is 13 minus 13? What happens when you divide by zero? It's infinity, right? It's error. So we should actually raise our expected rate of returns for all these companies. All these companies, according to the model, are actually better buys than what our required rate of return is. Are you with me? Understand? Now, the issue here is that these are blue chip companies with long histories of rising dividends. But they're not alone. Check out ExxonMobil, Procter & Gamble, United Technologies, Abbott Labs and AbbVie, Johnson Controls, Microsoft, and Ford. So the models, this model at the least, this model right here and the next one we're going to take a look at, they point you towards companies that are very large, have their roots deep in the economy, have been paying back their earnings, are making more money than they know what to do with. Right? They're not there, Facebook and Twitter and Google taking the money and reinvesting it and doing new things. Obviously, like McDonald's, they want to be everywhere. I don't know how they still have places to grow, I'm assuming, but they can't. You're not seeing any new McDonald's in San Diego, are you? No. So these are companies that are very large. Are you with me? Understand what's going on? Cool. And so this model points us in the direction of companies that I believe should make up the core, if you will, of your portfolio. Okay, now, the book goes on to do these other models, it's called the constant growth model. Assumes the dividends will continue to grow at a specified rate for a specified number of years. Here's the constant perpetual model, and then it adds this term, which is there to account for growth for a number of years. So it's just one step further. Do you have to learn it? No. Are you going to use it? No. And then it gets ridiculous. This model, this is the model we just looked. There's the constant perpetual. There's the model that was on the previous slide, and then they add this thing, and oh boy, doesn't it look impressive, especially if you like math. Are we going to do it? No, don't bother. Many decades ago, Benjamin Graham, intelligent investor, warned against very high-powered, very sophisticated mathematical problems, that models that removed any kind of human judgment. So forget about it. Cool? Okay. Now, let's before we do the observation, yes, I'm sorry. In my humble opinion.
So going with that judgment, would you take to say that if you set those, since they still have some growth, they're given a fairly decent rate of return in dividends?
Yeah.
If you're running an aggressive portfolio that can kind of offset the losses from riskier, more volatile things?
Let's hope so. Yeah, because we're going to take a look at some more volatile, speculative, dangerous, might make us very rich, might make us sad, stocks, and we'll see how we can tweak the model to use them, to find those stocks. But for every one of those speculative stocks, my hope is that you buy four or five of these boring companies. But that's my opinion. You know, everybody has a different opinion. Okay, so now let's take a look at the worksheet. Okay, so now we're down to page number 2 of worksheet number 1. Okay? And it's Pritchard's Pretty Good Praying Pretzels is paying 85 cents per year in dividends. Now, notice that it's right after the one that has utility. So, will it be the exact same order on the worksheets and on the assignment and on the exam? Nod your head yes. Yes. So, here, we see a company that is paying 85 cents in dividends. And their dividend growth rate has been very constant at 4%. Which model should we use? Right. If you see somebody says they've been growing their dividends at a constant rate or constantly growing their dividends at 85 cents, so what's that? That's 4% growth rate. And our required rate of return is 9%. So the formula is very straightforward. What's the dividend? What are the dividends? Everyone say 85 cents. What's the dividend? 85 cents times 1 plus the growth rate. What's the growth rate? Everyone should say 4%. We tell you, excuse me. What's the growth rate? Ooh, you're stubborn. What am I going to do? Wish I had a buzzer. Shock you. Okay, 4%. Okay. What's our required rate of return? Everyone wants to say 9%.
9%.
Wait till I ask you. What's our required rate of return? 9%. Oh, that sounded so good. And what's the dividend growth rate again?
4%.
Okay. So 85 cents, that's not a colon. 85 cents times 0.884, and then 9 minus 4, 0.05. So what do we believe the company should be worth, the stock should be worth? 1768. Now, we don't say what the market price is. The market price for 10 bucks, hey, market price for $30, Does that mean we should buy it? Does that mean we should not buy it? No, it's just... We're just pointing. We're just sort of, you know, tilting the odds in our favor. Cool? Is that good? Okay, because now we're ready. Now we're ready to see the best one. Oh, by the way, real quick thing. Okay, observations. How do you use them for a company that isn't paying any dividends? The answer is, if the dividends are zero, what do you get? Zero, so you can't, right? The consequential growth model is usually an unrealistic assumption, except for those big companies, the roots deep in the economy. Dividend growth rates are very difficult to estimate. With large cap, well-established companies, historical growth rates may be useful, but with fast-growing companies and new industries, it is almost impossible. The problems of the dividend discount model is notwithstanding, repeat after me, the value of a stock is based on the present value of the future cash flows. In other words, what is it going to pay me? Now, the discounted cash flow model is, in my humble opinion, is the absolute best model, and that's the one we're going to do right now. And we're going to do it on exam number 2, and exam number 3, and exam number 4, and the final exam, so you might as well learn how to do it now. Okay? Is that a deal? All right. So, the discounted cash flow model uses the pure version that we looked at the beginning. It takes the present value of the future dividends, and then it adds the present value of the price of the stock when we plan to sell. In other words, the companies pay 3 dividends and then promptly go out of business. Well, it happens. Every once in a while a company goes out of business. But no, if a company's paying dividends and been doing so for decades, it's a pretty good sign they're going to continue to do that. It's not covered specifically in our text. Why? I don't know. But as with the other dividend discount models, it is very sensitive to our choice of the required rate of return. Now, what we're going to do is we're just going to talk through this, and I'll show you how I set it up and why I set it up that way. Okay, so here's the company, Pretzels Unlimited. I like pretzels. They're selling for $22, all right? So write that down, $22, right? And they're paying $2 per share in dividends. Now, we looked this sum up and we believe that the dividends are going to increase to $2.20 in 2020, $2.30 in 2021, $2.30 in 2022, and then after about 4 years, we might be selling the stock and we think it's going to be worth $27. Our required rate of return is 12%. How do we value this? Well, we go back to that table. How much do we expect to get in year number one? How much do we expect to get in year number one? $2. How much do we expect to get in the first year? In our current year, $2. You with me? So what is that worth? We expect a rate of return of 12%. So we go across the 12% down 1 year, 0.893. So we multiply that $2 times 0.893. And what is that worth? $1.79 or so. You with me? And what do we expect to get in year number two? Everyone should say $2.20. See, it's right here. It says $2.20. What do we expect to get next year in 2020? Year number two? $2.20. So we go to the present value table, over to 12%, down 1 year. The present value multiplier is 0.797. You with me? So we multiply $2.20 times 797. See what's going on here? And we do that for year number three. And we do that for year number four. And then in the fourth year, not only do we get the dividend in the year number four, we are able to sell the stock. Now, we believe it's going to be worth about $27, right? We don't know that it's going to be worth that, but we're expecting it. That's our belief. That's our estimated. Or we got it from some other place. And so you do the same calculation. You take the multiplier in year number four times the dividend in year number four and times the required rate of return. Times the expected price of the stock. Don't do year number five, right? And we'll set it up so that you won't get confused. But if we do all that calculation, we see that we believe at 12% it's worth $23.81. What's the share price? Everyone say 22. Wait till I ask you, what's the share price? You haven't figured this out yet. You're not going to say, wait till you ask me. I'm sorry. It's a sickness. So, do we think the stock is worth value to us? Yes. Yeah. Is this actually going to happen in the future? Probably not. Probably not. But it at least gives us a sort of, okay, we'll go that way. We have a lot more work to do. Now, setting it up as a spreadsheet makes the calculation easier. So wait a minute, don't do it yet because we're going to do it one more. Notice that in the year number four, there's two of these calculations. The dividend in year number four and then the stock price in year number four. So if we simply just add those two together in the fourth year, it makes life a whole lot easier, right? We take the dividend in year number one, two, and three, and then the dividend in year number four, and add the stock price in year number four, what we expect the stock price to be, and then multiply through and sum. Cool? Adding this dividend and the stock price in the last year saves us a couple of manual calculations. But more importantly, it allows us to use a special spreadsheet function to calculate what's called the internal rate of return. And there's a spreadsheet out there that we'll take a look at that does that for you. Now, have you heard of internal rate of return? No. Because you don't get it until upper level finance, investment class, or graduate class. Which is unfortunate because it's very easy to use. Is it easy to do? No, it's a pain in the neck. Someday when you take an upper level or graduate finance or investment class, you're going to learn how to manually compute internal rate of return. And hopefully you will not get a sadistic professor who's going to make you do it more than once, because it's not hard, it just takes a long time. It's very tedious. That's why we have computers. You type in the formula and hit the enter key. It's that simple. So here's our formula. Here's our spreadsheet. And we'll take a look at it in just a minute. We'll take a look at the real spreadsheet. But the internal rate of return needs all cash flows, not just the positive cash flows. So how much did we have to pay for the stock? $22? That's an outflow. It needs all our negative cash flows. In other words, what did we have to pay for this investment? So in year number zero, in other words, time zero, right now, we pay $22. This year we're going to get $2. Next year, $2.20, $2.30, and then $2.30 plus $27, $29.30. And then right here is the formula. And it's equal to B2 through B5. And IRR stands for internal rate of return. If you don't know anything about spreadsheets, don't worry. Take a spreadsheet class or bang away. They're pretty easy. And then what we do is we put a guess. We guess it's going to be 12%. You can leave it blank. You can leave it zero, and the computer will do its best to figure it out. Sometimes it doesn't get a result, depending on how the cash flows look. So let's go back to chapter 5, chapter 6. Here it is. The Pretzels Unlimited discounted cash flow worksheet. No, not the, yeah, it's Pretzels Unlimited. So here's the spread. Let's go to like 250%. So you see what we did here? This one is actually the calculation we did together. We didn't actually do it. We glossed over it. But $2 times the multiplier, $2.20, multiplier in second year, $2.30, multiplier. Now, the cool thing about this is watch. The spreadsheets make life so much easier. If we just change it to 10%, what did I do? Why is it not? Numlock. Why isn't it doing it? Point. Oh, it's because it's view only. I'm sorry, view only. I have to make a copy. Whatever. I just changed the number here. The spreadsheet does the calculation. See? In class, we got to do it manually with your calculator. And you're going to do it enough times, you're going to get sick of it. But then you get the spreadsheet, and you go, oh, this is easy. But now here, over here, this is so cool. We type in the negative $22, what we had to pay for the stock, put in the cash flows, and right here is the formula. And it tells us, the formula says, look, if you, is it even going to let me move there? It lets me see it, thankfully. Okay. You put in internal rate of return, equal sign, you have to start with equal sign, open parentheses C4, the first cash flow out the door, and then the cash flow is coming in the door through C8, and you say, well, I think it's 12%, and the spreadsheet comes back and says, no, if you get these numbers, if you actually pay $22 and you get those numbers in the future, you're going to get $14.51%. If it happens, is it going to happen? No. It might go better. You know, things might go better. It might go worse. Yeah, any question? Question? No? Okay. So, cool. Did you think you were going to get graduate level stuff in the first semester? No. It's cool. Okay, so now we're ready to do problem number six. Yeah, problem number six. Have you heard of Jimba Jamba Jumba Juice? They want to sell you 800 calories of sugar? That's what some of them have. 800 calories of sugar, which is 40% of what you should eat in calories a day. Anyway, that's okay. They're selling for $56 a share. The dividend for the next 3 years are expected to be $1.80, $2, and $2.25. With me, folks? Okay. We forecast the price per share to be approximately $75 at the end of 2021. If we desire a rate of return of 10% using the discounted cash flow model, would we consider this a potentially good investment for us? What do we believe this is worth? So now here's the way I set them up. You can do it the same way or you can come up with your own way, but I make a spreadsheet on the piece of paper. Years, future cash flows, or just cash flows, PVM, which is a fancy way of saying present value multipliers, at 10%. Right, 10%? So, yeah. The present value multipliers at 10%. And then the discounted cash flows. And that's the verb we use, and I know it drives people crazy. But what are the years? 2019, 2020, and 2021, right? What are the cash flows we're going to get in those years? $1.80, everybody plus Eric. $1.80, $2, whoops, that's a two, and then $2.25 plus, what do we think the stock's going to be worth? So $2.25 plus $75. These are dollars. And what is that? $2.25 plus $75? That's a tough question, folks. So I ask you questions you'll never be able to figure out. And then what do? We put in the present value multipliers. So let's go back to our present value multiplier. Here they are. And for 10%, what are the multipliers?
0.909, 0.826, and 0.751.
Okay? Okay, so do it. Multiply a dollar. This is where your memory plus could come in. If you want to save the calculations at the end where you add them up, you can do $1.80 times 0.909, write down that number, and then hit memory plus. And then you do $2 times 0.826, equals memory plus. And then 2.77.25 times 0.751. Come on, what's your calculator? You don't have your smell phone? Put it on vibrate. what is it called? Smartphone. Okay, what's the first number, Mr. Garcia? Anybody got the first number? About $1.64. And you can put all the other numbers in there. You don't have to. We're not trying to be precise. $2 times 0.826? 2.625 or so. Close enough. Okay, and then $77.25 times 0.751? I'm sorry? 1.689. No, it doesn't sound right. 58.01 or so. Type 77.25 times 0.751. Okay, I think you're doing one up to there. And then you add those three up together. 61.30. Yeah, whatever. Close enough. $61.30. We're not trying for precision. Did everyone see that? Is that difficult to do, calculate? No, it's actually very simple. Do you know what the hell you're doing? Maybe. Maybe not. You're taking these future numbers and you're bringing them back to the present. That's what you're doing. So, if we go back to the worksheet. Where's the worksheet? It says it's selling for $56. We believe it's worth $61. So, can we reasonably expect that we're going to get 10%? Maybe. Maybe. Maybe not. We don't know what we're going to get. We really don't know. What? It sounds reasonable. Hopeful. You hear this term all over and over again. Cautiously optimistic. What? Using this model. But this another model might come up with something completely different, right? And so, we're just tilting the odds in our favor. We're pointing toward those companies that should, return a decent return. Are you with me? Understand? Piece of cake? Okay, good. Now, this is where it gets even better. The discounted cash flow model can be used when there are no dividends. Huh? Well, here's Genes R Us. Have you heard of them? You know what the one chromosome said to the other chromosome? Do these genes make me look fat? They're currently selling for $21 a share. Right? Currently selling for $21 a share. They don't pay any dividend. In fact, I'm losing money. But we believe that in 5 years, so $21 a share, but in 5 years, they're going to be worth $50. Our required rate of return is 13%. Well, there's no dividends. So what happens to these numbers? When there's no dividends, what do these numbers hit?
Zero.
What zero times anything is? So we don't get any value from dividends because there are no dividends. But wait a minute. If we think the stock is going to be worth $50 in 5 years, we can think of that as a future dividend, a future cash flow. It's not a dividend. It's the capital gain. So go to the, 13%? We go to the table, go across the 13%, down 5 years, what's the future value multiplier? 0.543. Multiply the $50. And what do we think the present value of this cash, this stock is, this future cash flow? Come on. About $27, right? $27.03 or something like that? 15 cents, yeah. It's selling for 21. So do we think it's a potentially good investment? Wait a minute. What can we say about the risk of this stock versus this stock? Can you see how risky something like this is? It could be $50 from here, 5 years from now. It could be 50 cents. Why? Because there's, all of a sudden the phase three trial, the drug was stopped because everybody started growing three eyes in the middle of their forehead. Or whatever, right? Whatever. Or they all died. All the people died. Oh, well. What are we going to do? So these are speculative stocks, these companies. But the discounted cash flow model can still tell us whether or not we think it's a decent investment. Yeah? Don't you think this is cool? I do. I get so excited. This is my favorite thing to do in the world. I know. With my clothes on. Okay. So let me see. Okay. So now let's take a look at number 7, which, again, will be in the same order in the assignment sheet and in the exam. The price of biotechnology, nanotechnology. Have you ever heard of them? There was a company. It's a company here. I don't know if there's one around. They're called Nanotech here in San Diego. And this is about 10 years ago when nanotechnology started making it into the mainstream. And all of a sudden, the price of their stock started going up. Nothing changed, but people started hearing in the news, nanotechnology. Oh, here's a company called Nanotech. Buy them. Okay, $15 a share, right? They pay no dividends. They have no earnings. But in 3 years, we expect the price to be $35. If our desired rate of return is 12%, would this be a potentially good buy? Hint, what's the only model we can use when there's no dividends? What's the value of zero dividends in the future?
Zero.
But $35 for 3 years at 12%, we go to our table, go to 12%. I got the wrong one highlighted there. What's the present value multiplier? 712 multiply 35, that's a 35, believe it or not, times 0.712, $24.90 or so?
92
cents. And what's it selling for? So do we think it's a potentially good buy? Well, the model is telling us that it is, but is this a risky stock? It's actually present value. We're calculating the present value of this future cash flow. I know the verbiage tends to get people confused. What the hell is present value? But it means, what do we think that $35 is worth to us today? That $35 that we're going to get in 3 years, if we require a 12% rate of return, is worth to us today almost $25, $24.92. So are you with me? Understand what's going on here? These models aren't just, you know, forget them. They're just there to get you to look at a stock in a different way and realize that, yeah, this company can make, these companies, you know, $1,000 could become $50,000. Is that going to happen with a 3M, with a McDonald's, with a Target? Is that going to have $1,000 become $50,000? No, but this $1,000 could become 50 cents, right? And you buy it for $11.88, and it winds up being 30 cents. Know anybody who's done that? Bought a stock for $11. It was actually a biotechnology company based here in San Diego that was really awesome, and it became 30 cents. See? Some of us had to learn the hard way. Okay, so we're almost done. All right, is this cool or what? So, now, the book goes into the residual income model, the free cash flow model. These are basically variations on the same themes that we've done. So we're going to ignore them. Maybe we'll come back to them at the end of the semester. But once you see them, you go, oh, okay, I see this. I see this. This is basically what we've done already. So, okay, piano, this is all great. But just where is supposed to get this historical information anywhere? And just who decides what next year's earnings per share, sales per share, cash flow per share, dividends per share, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, are going to be, let alone what the expected price of the stock in 3 to 5 years is going to be? Before the internet, is that BI? This information was not readily available. You'd normally go to your broker for it or to the library. You've heard of libraries, right? And you would use one of the securities industry's trusted information sources, and for decades. The most respected source, in my humble opinion, still one of the best, if not the best, is the Value Line. And I talked about the Value Line a little bit. I sort of mentioned it. Just shut up. I'll do it later. The Value Line is still one of the most respected and trusted sources of the data and analysis. It ain't cheap. If you want it for yourself, it's $50 a month if you want the big one. If you want the cheapy one, that's about $20 a month. But that's why we have libraries. In the library, we have the Value Line 600, which is the $220 one, or 228 or some strange number. But that's all we need for this class. When you go to one of the libraries, and there's a link on the class website, Chula Vista Main Library had it. I don't know if they still do. San Diego Main Library does. There are about 8 or 9 libraries in the San Diego system that have it. So check it out. I'm a very big fan of the Value Line. And when we come back, we will take a sip from the fire hose and take a look at the Value Line. And that's where we get that 8% or 9% or 10% of the dividend growth rate. And that's where we get the expected price in 3 to 5 years. Okay, so that's what we'll do on Thursday. We will go through worksheet number 2, and we will prepare for the exam online. And those of you who want to take it face-to-face will contact me individually, and we'll make a time for you to take it individually. Do worksheet number 1 over again. Hide the answers. Do worksheet number 2 on your own. Play with the spreadsheet online, and have fun. Brilliant fun. Okay, anybody need a 3-ring binder? I got an extra